Hello and welcome to Leading at a Local Level, an MLG podcast where we talk about leadership issues related to the local church, local charities, local businesses. We try and draw out themes and ideas that might be relevant to people just seeking to really make a difference for the kingdom of God. And it's great to be joined again, as always, by John. How are you doing this morning, John?
I'm all right, Tim. Just recovering. Did a cycle ride yesterday for the first time in a long time. So just recovering, but also plotting because I think I need a road bike to keep up. So that's the plan for my next significant birthday, is to get a road bike. So next time you see me, I might well be kitted out in Lycra and ready to go properly. So yeah, no, I'm good. That's where I'm at. How about you?
Yeah, good. So you plan to become a mammal, do you?
Middle-aged man in Lycra. Yeah, I'm aspiring to it.
Absolutely, yeah. So very good, yeah.
I think you're there already, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we, as you know, we love cycling in our church, and so we cycled up the Alps a few weeks ago in France. That was good fun. Yes, that's the plan. And when the weather is good, you want to get out on your bike. When the weather is rainy and cold in the winter, it's less so. yes, indeed. But good. We're going to continue our series, aren't we, John, Leading Diversity, which is a series we've been working our way through and really looking at issues related to how do you lead people who are not the same as you. And in our churches, we've got all different types of groups of people, and we want to lead them well. We want to be intentional and thoughtful around making sure that people from different groups are not only welcome, but actually are able to use their God-given gifts and talents and really kind of contribute to the life of the church. And I mean, again, if you're listening to this and you lead a charity or you lead a business, it's exactly the same in those contexts. And it doesn't just happen naturally, does it? I think that's what this series is drawing out, is that you can't just kind of just assume that just because you're a good leader that, you know, you can apply the same principles to every group.
That's right. Or if you're a cyclist, that everyone likes cycling, you know, you are welcome whether you cycle or not.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Good. So we've got a special guest today. Today we're going to be talking about singleness, leading those that are not married in your church or in your organisation. And we've got a special guest who's a friend of yours, John. So it's probably good if I bring her in and you can introduce her.
That's right. Yeah, it's great to welcome Jenny Pollock, who's joining us today. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Good to be here. Thanks.
Great to have you with us. Now, Jenny, I work with you at the Christian Medical Fellowship. You're head of public policy there, and you obviously do a lot of speaking, writing, both books and blogging around the issue of singleness, but also a number of other issues as well. And we can't wait to get to know you a bit today as we grapple with this question. So a warm welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
I think really what we're looking at today is what does it look like to be a church in particular that welcomes single people? We'll reflect, I think, a little bit on the fact that many leaders are not single or have forgotten what it was like to be single. And the reality is that even if you're married, it's likely that you have spent or maybe will spend large periods of your life singles. This is incredibly relevant. But how do we as churches and communities care for those who don't have children? What does it mean to be part of a church family? These are some of the questions that we're going to dig into today with you, Jenny. So Jenny, just a little thing for you. You talk about you being a writer and a blogger and a speaker. What is it like to be producing, you know, a blog post or indeed writing a book? I mean, tell us about what your writing process is like. How do you focus enough to produce?
That's a really good question. I really love the writing process, so it's actually not too hard for me to focus. And sometimes it takes a while to kind of get rid of all the scatteredness and focus in on it. So one tip I've learned is to turn my Wi-Fi off and set a timer of 20 minutes on my phone. I'm not allowed to look at my phone or go and Google anything or anything until that 20 minutes is up. And that's long enough to get me into the flow and just get on with writing. But I really just enjoy the process. Words just flow out. It's great.
It's great. Yeah. And we mentioned blog. I mean, Think Theology you blog there, and really I think Tim and I both follow you, what you write there. So yeah, if you're listening in, that's a great place to check out Jenny's writing, as well as others as well. So Jenny, it'd be great to get to know you a little bit, and I guess to sort of dig into a little bit of why you're here on this podcast. You are in the right room, which is great. So tell us a bit about your story as it pertains to singleness and the church particularly.
So I am approaching my own significant birthday this year. I'm going to be 50 later this year. And for the last 25 years, until very recently, I have been single, always wanted to get married, always wanted to have children, and just sort of assumed that would happen. My parents met and married quite young, had us very young. So I just sort of assumed it was a natural thing. And as the years started to tick by, and, you know, I was a missionary, I was traveling the world, I was meeting all sorts of people all the time, and just God wasn't bringing to me that one special person that I was just sort of assumed he'd designed me for. And I think that was a lot of what we're going to get onto later is a lot of kind of the teaching and assumption of the church is that's the ultimate goal, really. Yes, obviously discipleship and, you know, being with Jesus and all that, but you're meant to be married. As a good Christian will be a married one. And so I realized in my late 30s probably that I wasted a lot of time because I was thinking that I wasn't quite in my real life yet. I just sort of was thinking of my life as kind of an extended gap year, just doing stuff and, you know, keeping busy and doing good stuff for God and, you know, working at what, following his lead, but just with the sort of expectation that I'm just, it's a light touch thing, and reality hadn't kicked in yet.
No, that's really helpful. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, and you're not the only one, are you? I mean, what are we talking about, Jenny, in churches more generally in terms of the numbers proportion of single people that might be there?
Yeah, it's hard to get statistics. I saw one that's about a third of regular churchgoers are single, which is a bit less than in the population as a whole. But that's still, you know, a third of our churches. Yeah. And some of those, as you said in the introduction, some of those will be not yet married. Others will be widowed or divorced. It covers both ends.
But that is very striking, isn't it? I mean, and Tim, from a sort of a church leader perspective, what's your thoughts on that? You know, as you lead and you work with other leaders leading single people, how do you respond to that?
Well, when we were having this brief conversation before we went to press record on this podcast, and I think I was trying to remember if there is any single leaders that I know, as in any elders who are single. I don't think I can think of any. And so if you've got, I mean, we talk about diversity, a third of people isn't necessarily diversity. It's just a significant majority, well, not majority, but it's a significant number within your church. And I think this is where, you know, I think, you know, it's been great to read Jenny's writings over the last couple of years. I've certainly found your writings, Jenny, really helpful, along with there's a guy called Sam Albury, isn't there, who's written kind of some good stuff on this subject. Indeed, Andrew as well, who's in this series, has written some good stuff. And I think it's raised my awareness as a church leader to realise, oh, like, I have no concept of what it is to really be single. I got married when I was 21, and I met my wife when we were 16. John and I attempted to both woo her together, and I won.
oh, you're going to go there, aren't you? Oh, wow. That's going to be cut from this podcast.
That lasted less than a day. That's a different day. That wasn't a serious thing. But yeah, like it was just a, I don't let him forget that. It's just, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's not the first time it's come
up. I'd like to say. But, you realise, like, I've completely forgotten what it's like to be single. I don't know what it is to be single. And neither do a lot of the other guys. In fact, I think all of that was four elders in our church. I think every one of us was married by the time we were 21 or 22, that kind of age. And so you think, like, no concept of, like, of what it is to be single. And so how do we lead that group of people when it's completely not our experience at all? Mm. And it's somehow, I read something, I think I said, and it's like, it's little things like, you know, going to the shops and realizing, how do you buy for one person? Which I know sounds like a really silly thing, but I was like, no, I always, you know, I'm thinking like, I've got to buy for like five, six people at least, you know, and like, just, so yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Everything comes in packs of two and two for one deals as well. That, like, if you go to restaurants, there's always two for one meal deals. And like, that doesn't work for me. Can I come back next week and have the second one? I just don't naturally have someone to share with, so I don't get those bargains.
I mean, Jenny, maybe you could just, from your own experience, but also just from, you know, experience of others and all the things you're involved in, people you're involved with, help us to feel that a little bit more, what it is like, what are some of the challenges to be in a church congregation and be single? And we're going to look for some of the positives shortly, but let's kind of wallow a little bit in some of the things that are challenging, because I think that'll be helpful.
Yeah, the biggest thing for myself has been in the past the celebrations of people's engagements and marriages and, you know, babies being born, which is all wonderful and great, and we absolutely should celebrate that. But we need to also be looking out for what can we celebrate in the singles' lives. So, you know, as I said, I've got a significant birthday coming up, and I want that to be celebrated, partly because I want to model to the church, here are some things that you can look for in single people's lives and celebrate that are outside of relationships. So we, at Christian Medical Fellowship, one of our single staff members bought her first home, and we gave her some money towards buying some, you know, furniture and filling it, you know, because we would always give people a gift if they were getting married. And so I wanted to, you know, help us to think, well, here's a really significant milestone for her. She's doing it all on her own. Let's respond as we would have if it was someone getting married. So looking out for things like that, and when those are overlooked, it can just be really hard. You feel like, you know, my milestones aren't as special as other people's.
Can I ask a question there, Jess?
Yeah.
Because I think it's a great point, and I think absolutely. But one of the challenges I've found with leading single people is also a recognition that they can be very sensitive around milestones, in the sense that, so, turning 40, for example, and being single is almost potentially like one of those things that can be really painful, because, like, I've reached this middle point in my life, if that's, you know, it's not a thing, but, you know, I mean, almost 40, that kind of, I've reached middle age, or and I'm not, and my life is downhill from here almost. And so how do we do that sensitively? Because I worry sometimes I'm going to put my foot in it. Which I do a lot of time, by the way, just as evidenced by that.
Reducing the number of times,
I mean, I think that's one of the key things I want to say to leaders is, you're allowed to have those conversations with people. Like, you don't have to guess what someone might want and what they might find difficult. Like, I really value the fact that I have a really good relationship with my leaders, and they're able to come to me and say, how would this hit you? You know, we're doing a sermon series on X. How would this come across to you? And I'm able to go to them and say, you know, my birthday's coming up. I want you to celebrate it. And just, you know, developing those relationships where you are able to just ask and have those conversations. It's not that you have to guess. We're all different. And, you know, some people, things like Mother's Day, some people really struggle with Mother's Day. It's never been a problem for me. I would love to celebrate the mothers, and I'm very happy for them to get daffodils from their kids or whatever. But I've been in conversations with other church leaders where they've just been paralyzed by, what do we do? Do we celebrate it? Do we not celebrate it? Do we mention it? Do we give flowers to every female? And, you know, we're all different. It is difficult, but having those conversations, I think, is really the way forward.
Yeah, I love that point about the preaching. I think we can do that with other thinking about diversity in general as leaders. If you're up front and thinking about how things come across and having people that you ask, that's a great suggestion. Are there things that you have heard in the past from the front, whether it is, you know, sermons or you know, just generally leading from the front that you've found have been difficult, which will provoke us to think about how we lead well?
I haven't particularly, but again, partly because I've always had good relationships with my leaders. Yeah. So I know their heart and I know what they're trying to say. But there have been things that single friends have really struggled with. You mentioned Andrew Bunt. He recently wrote a blog post on Think Theology, sort of suggesting that the preachers talk about their friendships, because as you say, they are mostly married, mostly with families. It's easy for those to be the relationships we talk about. You know, I was saying to my wife the other day, dot, 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 and just remembering that there are other kinds of relationships out there and just making sure we talk about those, and those sorts of things can be helpful. But also I think there's a mindset shift that the whole church needs to do around this thing that the goal of life is to get married and have children. It's just so deeply ingrained because it is such a good thing. But it's not the biblical be all and end all. You know, discipleship is more than that. And singleness, Jesus chose to be single. This is something I realized recently. It wasn't that he failed to get married and sort of didn't quite find the right one. Yeah, yet, exactly. Yes, the bride is coming. But it was the best way for him to do his ministry on earth was to be single. And I think we should learn from that and just go, there's a huge value and benefit to singleness. It can be a really purposeful state, and it's not just the sort of default of I haven't quite got to, as like I was saying before, the real life yet, and I haven't quite started properly living.
I think that's why I'll be honest, I was speaking as a church leader, I think why we're so grateful for people like yourself, Ginny, and others like Andrew and Sam Albury, as I mentioned, who are telling a good story around what it means to be single. Because I think as you say, the overwhelming narrative in our society, in our churches is, you know, like, let's get married. I mean, like, you know, I think, you know, John was married relatively young in his early 20s. You know, most of my friends were married. And in a sense, that's the story of the church. And that's great. But I think we need to tell another story. And I think part of the challenge as a church leader is when you're married and you've been married for a really long time, it can feel, and this is just, I'm just talking as a church leader, it can feel a little bit, I'm in danger of patronizing or being insensitive to those who's like, yeah, but mate, you've never been single. You got together when you were 16 and, you know, you've never really experienced anything else. And so what, you haven't got a clue what it's like. So why are you telling me? But even though you say, well, I'm going to preach it from the Bible, I think actually, you know, we do need to tell a good story around what it means to be in single and the value of it, and not just, you know, kind of reduce it, I think. You know what I mean? It's just something small. And I think that's just something to reflect on, isn't it? It's who is there in our churches? Maybe if they're not in our churches, who do we know more broadly that can start to speak a positive story around what it means to be single? Because Jesus was single, Paul was single, most of the New Testament is written by people that were single. You know, so you don't need to be married to be valuable.
No, and I think again from a leadership perspective, you mentioned it before, we sort of have this default thing that you need to be married to be a church leader, to be an elder, and that as you say, from the New Testament, that just isn't a model that we necessarily see there. Yes, you mustn't have more than one wife. And yes, if you have family, you must be demonstrating you're leading them well. But we've sort of translated that into an assumption that all elders will have families. And, you know, there are plenty of great men out there who have all the right gifting and who God would be using as leaders. It's worth looking out for them. and women leading in other contexts as well. You know, both our church networks would not have female elders, but you know, we would have women leading in different contexts. And
so what does that look like? I'm really intrigued to what you just said there, Jenny, because we just said that basically elders are, in our denominations, are going to be men. But what does that mean for you know, mature, capable, godly women who may be single, who can lead, who can teach? What might that look like? How do we think about that as leaders to make sure we're not excluding people?
Yeah. One way I find it helpful to think about it is in the family imagery that the New Testament uses a lot with fathers and mothers, that I've certainly seen in myself, there's a mothering gift that my church leaders have identified and have helped me grow in and released me in, that is giving me opportunities to lead. So I'm leading women's ministry, I'm leading a small group. They have facilitated areas where I'm able to lead and to speak. So I'm teaching to the women, doing that. And other contexts. So this Sunday, I'm going up to a church in North London, and we'll be doing an afternoon seminar teaching on, again, on contentment. And just, yeah, there are opportunities that aren't the Sunday morning, that aren't eldership, but are ways of leading people and speaking and teaching. So I've been really, really grateful for a number of men in my life who have recognized my gifting and given me opportunities to do that. You hear the negative so much, but I'm very thankful to that. I'm really appreciative of that.
Can I ask a question, Jenny? Like, how do you think that as churches we should preach on singleness?
That's a good question. And when it comes up in what you're teaching through in the Bible, yes. But I think, I don't know what I think about that.
Sorry, do you mind if I, because I think I agree with you. So I think that there's that balance, isn't there, between not trying to force things in, you know, just into text and scripture. And yet at the same time, we are called, I think, to speak into those pinch points that we find in culture and society and narratives that we, and then there's a huge narrative, isn't there, around you know, you can only be a whole person if you're sexually fulfilled, if you're in a relationship. You know, so many of our TV shows are driving towards, you find your meaning in somebody else, you find your pops on whatever it is. You know, it's so pervasive that actually I wonder what you think about this, Jenny, but I wonder whether we need to just be constantly, you know, kind of being aware of that, so that when we're talking about issues about identity and what it means to be a whole person, you mentioned about Jesus being a whole person and being single, that I wonder whether teaching with that in mind as we approach lots of different issues is probably seems quite important to me.
Yeah, I think so. I that would tend to be my preference, that it's that way round. In my church, I'm in a central London church. There's lots and lots and lots of students. We're far more than a third of us are single. So it does get talked about more because it's the lived experience of so many people in the church. But we do also teach into marriage. But I don't know that we've done anything on widowhood. So there are just lots of different sort of life stages and but I tend to prefer teaching series that go through a book of the Bible anyway, rather than thematic ones, because
I think with the teaching as well, isn't necessarily, and this is just a thought as a leader, it's not really just trying to encourage single people. It's recognizing, and I think maybe this might lead John nicely onto his next question, but actually recognizing that the church family as a whole, and we have a very strong, our church really uses the idea of church family very, very meaningfully. Like, it's not just a phrase for us, it really is a big part of our identity. We are a church family. You don't just join our church, you join our family. That's kind of part of the, you know, we try to make that part of identity and take that very seriously. But often I think that married people or people that are, you know, not single, if that's the need to think more in, need to be aware, I think, of, be made aware of like the challenges that single people face. Because I think if you don't know it, if you're not aware of it, you're just going to miss out. And I think, you know, helping those people understand, like, you know, how can you include someone who is single in your family, for example, is, I think, is something that we should teach on. Because I think if we don't teach on it, people don't naturally pick up on it. Because I speak as someone with three boys, young boys, your life just becomes completely consumed by your family life, your church, and you don't have time unless you make an intentional thought, right, okay, I need to make more effort to invite people into my family, into my life. It doesn't happen, or it certainly doesn't for me, and it happens naturally. So I think for me, I'm thinking if we're going to teach you, that's, it's not so much about teaching to single people, like you need to be content. It's more about actually how do we serve those people well? You know, how do we serve people who are single well? You know, the widowed individual, you know, recognising that, you know, anniversaries can be very challenging and, you know, things like that. So I think that would be my angle if I was going to come from it. But
I think that's really helpful. And that's one of the advantages to me, or one reason I'm quite an advocate for local churches and smaller churches, really, because you can be, when you're living closer together and there are fewer of you, it's so much easier to build those sorts of close relationships. And, you know, there was a season in my life when I was living very close to a family, and, you know, they just welcomed me in and I was able to sort of wander in and out almost at will, you know, as part of the family. I was living in the US in the southern states, and we never locked the doors, so didn't even have to have a house key. It was just, you know, come on in, pop around, you know, dinner is always at this time, come and join in. And some of that was then I was available as a babysitter to them, but that wasn't my only function in the family. It was it was a real intergenerational friendship, and that has endured, and that's been wonderful.
Could I just make a point, just interject really briefly? And I think just if anyone's listening to this, just inviting single people around your house when you want them to babysit is very, in my opinion, very demeaning, and something that we're very conscious of. It's like, oh, so all I'm good for then is basically when you want a babysitter. You'll be my friend when you, and I've had single people talk to me about that. Like, these people are only my friends when they want me to babysit for them, when we are going off to do something fun that I'm not included in. And no, stuff like that. It's really like you think, oh, you know, they'll love to babysit. But if you never invite them apart from that, like, that's just rubbish, isn't it? I'm just sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, we have a, sorry, Jenny, go on.
My pastor will sometimes say from the stage as well, single people, it's okay to invite us around to your house for dinner as a couple. You know, we as singles don't have to be just always the recipients of somebody else's charity. But, you know, if you want to get to know us, don't wait for us to invite you. We've got 200 people to care for. You know, invite us around. We like going to people's houses and getting to know them. And so that, I think, has been really helpful to me. That's, I'm not just a charity case. I have agency as well. And just reminding people from the stage that's the truth, I think, is probably part of that helpful mind shift.
Yeah, that's a great point. No, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever been as a family around to someone's house who is, you know, single person. I wonder whether part of that is confidence thing, or would they want to come? And I think, yeah, absolutely. But just say we've had somebody recently who's been coming around to our house for few years now, but they're moving on to another part of the country, and it was so interesting what they said as they left. It was something along the lines of, you know, the most significant part of their time in our town had been basically been made to be part of our family. And it wasn't a charity thing. We just genuinely enjoyed their company and enjoyed having them around, and it was that was really special, just hearing that. I mean, that wasn't our intention to kind of get that comment at the end of it, but it was It was very interesting. And it makes me reflect on the concept of I guess, intimacy and closeness. I remember one friend of mine, she said something along the lines, she said, you know, one of the difficult thing I find about being single is that I don't have anybody just to bounce ideas off. Mm. So, you know, I look for a flight ticket, you know, and there's nobody just to say, oh, you know, where do you think we should go on holiday? I don't know if that resonates, Jenny, that kind of sense of, you know, the companionship that I guess marriage and family can bring, and what that is like for somebody who's single. Could you just fill us in a bit on that? Because that would be helpful for us.
Yeah, I think that is a really, really key one. And that as I've recently entered into a relationship, I have just realized how many things this actually is. Just, it's so nice to just have somebody to talk to about it. And I hadn't realized how much I'd missed that. And it is silly things like flights, like, should I go this day or that day? And, you know, so yeah, and I think that's something that we do need to work on well. I've recently read a book by a guy called Andy Crouch called The Life We're Looking For, and he talks about households, that's what we're really looking for, that place where we can know and be known, and probably be known a little more than we're comfortable with, and they see our flaws as well as our strengths. But it's in those sorts of relationships where you just are in each other's lives so closely that you get to have just those ordinary day-to-day conversations. That's what I had with that family, I think, in the US, that it was just someone that I talked about my life with. And that's, I think, really important.
Yeah. And what as well about think about other ways of intimacy. So, you know, I think it's Sam Albury who said, you know, we are wired for intimacy as human beings. And if we don't find it in healthy ways, we will find it in unhealthy ways. Mm. Because that's just part of our makeup as human beings. We are created to be intimate beings. So I'm just wondering what might that look like. And as we think about leading those who are singles, I've heard people be a bit critical before of, you know, a single person who's, you know, gone into a relationship with somebody, it might be unhealthy. And I can hear the criticism, you know, and say, well, that's not the way to do it. And, you know, you should be living celibate life and so on. But how do we create an alternative positive environment, which for intimacy that might, I don't know, what about hugs, things like that? Those things cross my mind. What do you think, Jen?
Yeah, I think, hugs are really important. We've got to this horrible point in culture where there's been so much toxicity about male-female relationships. And I think there's a real paranoia about just closeness. And again, I think the family language is so helpful. Thinking about brothers and sisters. There's a book by Rachel Gilson. I think it's Rachel Gilson who talks about things that are chased by default. A brother-sister relationship is intimate. It's really close. You can have hugs and tickle fights and whatever, but it's chased by default. There's no expectation that what's he thinking, does he want more than this? And and I think probably tickle fights are beyond where we're going to get to as the church and the culture at the moment, but hugs, you know, there's a few guys at church that I hug regularly and just know that's a friendship level that we've got and that we're comfortable with, and that's really helpful. There are some people that really need physical touch, and I've got some friends who were single for a long time, and that was the biggest issue for them. There's no one that I saw it at a conference I was at recently. All the guys, the elders, would all sort of clap a hand on the shoulder as they were talking. They were always just touching each other, hugging, and just very physical with each other. And then when they were talking to each other's wives, you know, in a mixed group, there would have been no problem, that there was just no hands involved at all. There's no touching. And just, I think, to be able to model that into male, female, non-sexual touch, just
Great point.
Do you know one of the things that I do? I mean, this is a personal thing. This is my personality, as you may have. Jenny doesn't know me, but I tend to be quite cheeky and often sort of and take the mickey out of people. And I do that a lot with women because I find it kind of, in a sense, it's quite a safe way of them feeling, particularly single. Yeah. You know, and it's almost like brotherly. Like, I'm a big brother. I'm going to tease you. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And I do that intentionally. That they may find. I think they find it funny. I mean, I should probably never.
keep going in that world. It's great.
But it's treating people like family, isn't it? It's that kind of, I'm going to take the mickey out of the fact that, you know, yeah, maybe you're wearing a ridiculous jumper today or something. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I mean, it, obviously, hopefully not being insensitive and offensive, but, you know, just actually that's the kind of thing, as you say, it makes you feel connected, doesn't it? And known. Yeah. And I think leaders, you can do that, I think, as a leader from a position of safety, particularly if you know your marriage is strong. It's like, I know this guy loves me and I know he cares for me, and actually I feel like I can have fun with them. Do you know what I mean? And that's quite important, I think.
Very much. And that, again, that once you've got that closeness of relationship, there is the sensitivity of, oh, I think maybe I did offend them that time, and quickly going to them and apologizing and you know, just being open and willing to say, I'm sorry, did I get that wrong? Just the stuff we do with close friends, I think is really helpful.
About kind of discipleship. This is how these conversations go, Jenny. We just talk over each other.
It's not all planned.
Absolutely. Yeah, we script this totally. I think one of the things that I've realised, this is just a practical thing, I've realised that sometimes single people come to me and they vent. And I think that as a leader, you need to be open to receive the venting. Because sometimes they have, as you've just talked about, you haven't necessarily had someone to talk to about it. And so you've got very worked up in your own little headspace about this, and you've got, and suddenly you go to the church leader or your elder and you just go, ugh. And I often just like, I sat there thinking, okay, this can be, in some cases, particularly also, my one of the other, and this may be a slight stereotype, but often people that have been on their own for a long period of time, they do develop a natural strength, like a good strength, because you have to. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they can come across often as quite sort of forceful in their approach, because they've had to be, in a sense. They've had to do everything themselves. And so sometimes it's realizing and hearing that and going, okay, it's okay. They're not really mad. They're just, or they might be mad, but they're just, this is, I need to be part of that process of helping them work it through rather than try and react to that. And it's just like, okay, I'm just going to listen. I'm just going to hear that. I'm going to acknowledge how you're feeling rather than simply trying to contradict you, because actually maybe you just want to talk through and it's almost like built up. And so I don't know if that's been your experience with your single friends, et cetera, and how leaders have dealt with you, but I know that's personally been my experience, and trying to put that head on when I'm dealing with a single individual particularly.
Yeah. I think that's really helpful, because there are a lot of people who are external processors. They need to be able to speak it out before they can work out where they're at. And I think it takes wisdom and discernment, because there will be some people for whom to go to their leader and talk about something does mean this is really important. This is a big issue for me now within the church, and I need to be heard and to be able to properly talk about it and stuff. But I think there are others that, as you say, just, it's become a bigger deal. I think we saw it in COVID. I certainly saw it within my small group, that things that normally would have been small issues that just got dealt with quickly because we were in conversation with each other all the time became enormous things, and just, took a lot of wisdom to work out actually how big is this. And now they've spoken about it, has that diminished it to a point where it's more manageable for them? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can talk through and work out where it's got to. I think that's,
No, that's really helpful. Really good. Really good.
Can I ask one?
We haven't got long left. So yeah, let's go for it.
So talking about leading single people well, Jenny, like, and you've talked about your relationship with your leaders. I think there is definitely a role for even more intentional discipleship, like one-to-one discipleship, that maybe asks even more kind of challenging questions, I guess. Because again, you haven't got that kind of environment where you're just talking it through with someone. So I suppose, have you, has that been something that's happened in your life where people have, you've regularly met with people on a one-to-one or leaders who have asked you more, you know, those kind of questions, or is that something that is, isn't as relevant? What's your thought on that?
That for me has come more through friendships than specifically through leaders. I've had sort of small group leaders who have been very good about, just asking the deeper questions. It's something that, yeah, I think I probably need to get better at as a leader myself, asking other people the difficult questions. I think that's one area where you, particularly for speaking to women, you do need a female leader doing it. So hence, we need to be making sure that we're giving women leadership positions and roles and sufficient kind of profile within the church that it doesn't, that it, that there's a significance there. It's not just this random woman is my friend and that's nice. But yeah, this is one of the leaders in the church who really cares about me. So I think that's a really important thing. But yeah, for those deeper questions, it does need to be same sex.
I agree. People.
Yeah. And it just shows, doesn't it, that we talked a bit about smaller church, but even if you're a larger church, to actually, you know, go small, because it's those relationships. Mm-hmm. It's the way that that's so important. I think I've particularly noticed, I don't know any stats on this, but particularly noticed that a couple of larger churches, that it's easier for people to come and then just to disappear out the back door. And even more so if you're single. And I've seen that happen so many times. And so it does need that intentionality, particularly in different ways for single people, that there's some intentionality required, I think, from the leadership. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason it's easy for singles to disappear is actually counter to a lot of the narrative we hear. So we often think, oh, great, single people have got so much more time. They can serve in the church and they can do blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And a lot of what I've heard when people are sort of drifting away is, I'm just so busy. There's so much to do, partly because I think we fill up our time with other things so that we're not sitting on our own in the evening thinking, why am I so lonely? You know, we're filling our time with things. It can also be an excuse. But also just, as we've kind of alluded to a couple of times, that you've got to do everything in life yourself. So there's no sharing it with the couple. It's that, you know, I've got to do all the housework and all the accounts and, you know, the garden and the whatever, just having to manage everything. It's not quite as clear cut as I've got more time so I can do stuff.
That's a great point. Look, I mean, I'm sure we could chat for forever. I mean, we have covered so many things, thinking about, you know, from the front, about leadership, eldership. We've talked about, you know, how we speak about singleness as purposeful rather than a deficient state. We've looked at intimacy, churches, family. Wow. Jenny, thanks so much. I mean, it's been just great to have your insights into this. And I know you haven't asked us to do this, but I think Tim and I are aware you're working on a book at the moment, and you also have one published, and both are very much speaking to this area. So could you just tell us a bit about those?
Just blocked out Jenny's face. Do you see that? just tone has knocked out her face there, didn't it? That's just... I might just block out your face, but I'll put it up again, Jenny. You can talk.
No problem. Thank you. So this is my book with its very lovely cover. I'm very grateful for a beautiful cover for my book. So yes, this is If Only. It's looking at how we find joyful contentment in the face of lack and longing. So it came out of my singleness, but also looks at other people's stories of childlessness, of chronic illness, of other sort of areas of, you know, if only this were different, then I could be content. And just showing that actually our contentment needs to be found in God. He's the only source of our true joy. So that one's, yes, available now.
Can I just say it's available, and I actually have three copies that I would be willing to give away. So if you've made it this far on the podcast and you're thinking, I haven't got that book, I like it, obviously go and track it down, give it to other people, but just send us a message. I'm happy to pop one in the post to you. Sorry to interrupt there.
Can I just say that's our first Leading at Local Level giveaway.
It is the first.
Maybe we should say watch to the end for the free giveaway. There we are.
It's great. Just so I've read it, and it is genuinely a great read and inspiring. Yeah, so thanks, Jenny. And what are you working on at the moment?
So the next one is picking up on a theme that I didn't get to dig into too much in that, which is the church as family. And yeah. You know, what is that meant to mean? Is it even plausible in our current culture? How can we start to live more like that in the difficult parts of it, you know, the accountability to one another, and but also in the lovely parts of it, the involving one another in our lives, the intimacy that we can have through that. Watch this space.
Absolutely, we will do. And we'll keep following your blogs. We've mentioned thinktheology.co.uk. Jenny, thanks so much for your time. It's been a real joy having you on the show, and look forward to having you again sometime.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Great. And as this is a part of our Leading at Local Level podcast for Mission Life Grace, we're just looking at diversity in the church at the moment. Really excited about this series. So look out for the other episodes. If you'd like to make a comment on what we've discussed, you can do that. Pop a comment below if you're on YouTube. Send us some questions if you want us to elaborate, because there's so many themes we could go into a lot more. And do share this with others if you think they're interested. Subscribe and encourage others to listen in as we seek to strengthen the local church leading at a local level. So God bless you all, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.